Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Katie Schaefer. Today we are discussing the 1995 movie Dolores Claiborne, which is based off of King's 92 novel of the same name. However, given the way the novel was written, the movie definitely makes some changes, to say the least, to make it a little more appealing to the visual aspect of a movie. Wouldn't you agree, Katie?
Yes, and it does a good job, I think.
Yeah, it certainly does, and what I like is that they still make it about Dolores, but they bring Selena more to the forefront, and you have these other characters, and there still aren't too many characters to really talk about. You sort of just have Kathy Bates as Dolores, Jennifer Jason Leigh as Selena, you have Judy Parfitt, I believe, as Vera, Christopher Plummer, who is obviously always fantastic, as Detective John Mackey, David Strathairn as Joe, and John C. Reilly as the Constable. You also have another appearance from Bob Gunton as Mr. Pease after he was prominent in the Shawshank Redemption adaptation, so a repeat guy there. But for the most part, Bob Gunton doesn't play a huge role. He's just the bank guy that Dolores goes and chews out, but really those characters are the ones that are sort of at the forefront for this, and Vera even less so because of the fact that she dies pretty early on in the movie and in the story in general, I would say too. But overall, a very, very solid cast for this.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody is bringing their A game. I mean, Jennifer Jason Leigh, this was during a time we didn't get to see a whole lot of her, and she is just spot on as Selena. And I mean, Kathy Bates is perfection in everything she does. And I think I'd totally forgotten that John C. Reilly was in this. And I'm always excited to see John C. Reilly, honestly. And he is so great. I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of scenes, but he really personifies like the dopey detective that we get a little bit of in the book, even though it's just from Dolores's narration. And he feels like such a great character addition.
Mm-hmm.
It's so Stephen King. Like, he's just the perfect, like, little side Stephen King character that you can kind of look at him and be like, I know exactly who this guy is and what his motivations are.
Right. And that's refreshing to have, too, because as you and I both know, there are many, many adaptations that change things for the worse. This one, I think all of the changes made are understandable and they make sense story-wise, because really, despite the fantastic cast, we've seen adaptations where they get these familiar names and faces and you're kind of like, okay, maybe this will be good, and then you watch it and you're like, no, that story just did not live up to expectations, whether or not it's something like, you know, Golden Years, where King wrote it for TV, or it's an adaptation where someone else has sort of the creative power to change the story to make more sense for the big or small screen. And in this, the story at its core remained the same. Dolores was accused of this horrible thing that we all know she didn't do based on the opening scene and everything. And then you get these flashbacks to her relationship with her husband, Joe, and what Joe was doing to Selena. While you don't explicitly see what Joe did, you can tell in Selena's mannerisms that something is going on. And I would say the only downside to the story is that we don't really get that connection with Gerald's game in this.
Yes, I agree. And I would guess it's because there wasn't a... That movie probably couldn't have been made at that time, because, you know, she spends most of it in a pair of panties. But I, too, felt like it could have been something in there. So I felt it was a mixed bag. Like, I really liked that part of the book, but I don't know how they would have squeezed it in here.
Yeah.
And this screenplay was done by Tony Gilroy, who is both an Academy Award nominee and a Pulitzer Prize winner for one of his plays. He was nominated for Michael Clayton way back in, I don't know, the mid-90s, I think. And I think he gets a lot of credit for how well he takes this essentially narrative book and turns it into a multi-perspective story and allows the characters who we kind of only see from Dolores's perspective in the book to come into their own, and in particular Selena, be a driving force behind what's happening. And especially his adaptation of us getting to see things from Selena's perspective, is heartbreaking. Like, she doesn't do a whole lot of talking about her experiences, but just from, like you said, her mannerisms and her face and how she reacts to what Dolores says and does is so hard to watch in that way that really gets to the viewer, or at least it did for me.
I think hands down, Selena is the most sympathetic character in this, even though Dolores didn't necessarily do anything in particular to deserve the way that Joe treated her all of those years of their marriage. But I think Dolores sort of had more of this vindictive side to her than even Selena did. Selena's clearly the one who got it the worst because of how her father abused her, and then because of just kind of how her mother was acting after the fact. And you just get this sympathetic young character who then grows up and, like you mentioned earlier, Jennifer Jason Leigh just sort of plays the role to perfection because she is damaged, and there are so many people who have gone through what her character went through, and they are able to relate. And, you know, while it's not something that everyone is going to be able to relate to, I think you still get this sense of, I can't believe this is a thing that happens to people.
Yes. And I really got to give a shout out to Ellen Muth, who plays young Selena, for nailing, like, Jennifer Jason Leigh's acting performance in this as well. Like, she very much feels like a younger version of this character, and her mannerisms and little tics and how she moves her body all feel like Jennifer Jason Leigh's performance is a natural progression of that. And I've typically, in these kind of movies, like, the older actor, I think, sets the standard of this is how we're doing this. And then the younger actor kind of mimics them.
The performances mirrored each other so well throughout the whole thing.
Yes, exactly. And I was really surprised by that, because this is a hard role for a kid that age, you know, especially with having a father be abusive. And they have that one scene on the boat where he's literally, you know, abusing her. And I can't imagine how hard that was to shoot. And she does it really, really well.
Yeah. And you have to imagine, too, for the actor playing Joe, you know, he's probably not remotely that kind of person at all in real life, as we see with so many of these men who play the bad guy, play the villain. It's like, okay, you know, you see them outside of these kind of roles. And for one, we never really know who any of these actors are unless they're really showing you, like, behind the scenes kind of stuff. So when you hear about things like, you know, what his character is doing in real life, and I'm not saying that we heard anything about this actor in particular, but just in general, it kind of makes you think when you watch roles like this, you're like, God, I really hope this person isn't like this. And looking back on this role through the lens of, you know, 2019, 2020, you're just like, these are things that people actually got away with during these time periods that these movies are taking place. And there wasn't anything the authorities would do about it. And so to see a character like Dolores take it into her own hands, you really get this sense that justice was done, even if it wasn't done the right way.
Right. And I think, you know, this is set 1975 is when the eclipse happens. And I think it's very much a reflection of that time period. Like,
yeah,
that they don't indict her and that she gets away with it when it's obvious that most of the town thinks she did it. It feels like there's also kind of a, well, we know you did this and you shouldn't have done it, but you probably had a good reason for it, because it was obvious that Joe, I mean, even in the movie where we don't get nearly as much information about what Joe does to Dolores and how, what a total shitbag he is, it's obvious that he is kind of known as a loser and not a nice person.
Right.
And you get the sense that, like, the town just kind of let it go because, like, well, he wouldn't have gotten in trouble for beating his wife at that point. Oh, well, that's what you get. And even for molesting his daughter, like, that's really hard to prove at that time. And they were not sympathetic to, especially teenage girls. So it was, an understandable way for her to make it stop. And David Strathairn does a phenomenal job at being a creepy asshole.
Mm-hmm. He certainly does.
And I think he does that role pretty regularly. So, and I mean, he's an also nominee, Academy Award nominee, and has been in, God, I don't even know, 80 or 90 films. And this role really shows how well he can become such a terrible character and make you hate him so much. And I think the choice of actors in this is really, really good at pinpointing what's needed, because this is such a stripped down version of the story. You know, in the book, we get so much more about, like, Vera and Dolores' relationship. And
they have a son in the book, don't they?
They have two.
Okay.
They have two. One who is, like, a senator, I think. And then the other one, like, dies young. And they just cut all of that out of the book or out of the movie. Yeah. And
but even Dolores and Joe, I think, didn't they have a boy and a girl?
Yeah. No, Vera has a daughter and a son who die. And Joe and Dolores have two boys and Selena.
Okay.
So, and like all of that is just erased.
Because I remember in like the moments where they were clearly flashing back to when Selena was younger, I was like, I kind of remember at least one or two boys running around the house. And then
yes.
And you don't get that in this. But I think because the main focus is on Selena and her relationship with her father and burying what he did so deep that she won't even admit it as an adult, you kind of have to pull that out of her. And, you know, the siblings in this instance for Selena aren't that important to the way they're telling the story in the movie, but it was an interesting change from the book, at least as far as the flashbacks go, because everything is focused more on Selena's relationship with Joe at that point. And, you know, I think I can speak for both of us when I say that Joe's death was one that you were almost happy about. And, you know, I have some new sound effects here, and this one will let everyone know exactly how we feel about Joe's death here. I think that sums it up very nicely.
It does. It really does. Because when he finally makes that fall, you're like, nobody cares, dude. Die slow. And I was almost sad because in the book, it takes him a long time to die. And he dies real quick in this. I was like, I feel like he deserved a little more for this. It was I think this is probably one of the best adaptations I've watched of Stephen King's work, like with how well it encapsulates the story of the novel and adapts it for film in a way that doesn't really leave you feeling like you need it anymore. And it's 2 hours and 15 minutes or so, and it is a tight 2 hours and 15 minutes. Like, every moment counts, and there's no wasted minutes in this, I think.
Yeah, you really get a sense for who both Dolores and Selena are in this, and even Vera in the moments that we do see her, same with Joe and the cops who are going after Dolores. You really just know right away, okay, this is who this character is, this is the role they're playing, and then you just get to see how everything unfolds. And I think they do that so well with the story that they're working with, because, you know, in the book, Dolores is just sitting down telling a story the entire book. It's completely written from her perspective. And you don't get those moments where she knows what Selena's life is like at the office and things like that. So I think this just really bolstered some of the character work that King did in the book. And really, you know, it's not shocking that Kathy Bates was good in this, because we had already seen her in Misery and we knew she could take on these sort of different personas with her roles before. So to have a lot of the King adaptations, I think, that aren't necessarily horror driven end up being sort of these top tier ones, I think is just a testament to King's character work. You know, Misery is definitely a horror story. Don't get me wrong there. You know, everything that Paul Sheldon goes through is like somebody's worst nightmare. But with this, it's a different kind of nightmare, and you don't really have these horror elements to it where Dolores is, you know, smashing Joe to pieces with a sledgehammer or something like she is in Misery with Paul Sheldon, or, you know, like Kathy Bates is in Misery with Paul Sheldon. And it's just one of those things where movies like this, Shawshank, Green Mile, you're kind of in awe of how these came to life on the screen. Because, you know, Shawshank wasn't a long story. It was a novella. And I think that worked perfectly for the way that Frank Darabont did that adaptation. And then he goes on to do The Green Mile, which will be coming up relatively soon, if I'm not mistaken, on the podcast. But then you have something like Dolores Claiborne, where maybe not a ton of people talk about it because even though it stands the test of time, I think, very well, it's one of those stories that I think didn't quite hit as mainstream as some of the others did. I think this is more of a kind of niche Stephen King fans know about this movie and this story. And, you know, I know people who didn't even realize Shawshank was a Stephen King thing. So, you know, that hit a whole different level. But with this, I feel like it's kind of one of the more underrated King adaptations.
Yeah, I think so too. Because I think it, like you said, it's not a horror story, but it very much deals with horrific acts, and they're unfortunately everyday kind of horrific acts, you know, bad marriages and abusive parents and abusive work situations with complicated relationships. Like, these are all things that you actually experience. It's not like Pennywise the Clown in It. It's very much everyday life. And this is not a happy story.
No.
It's not like Shawshank, where you have that ending that, like, he goes through hell, but he makes it out. It's like, there's a reconciliation at the end, and that's some kind of positive ending, but, like, Dolores is still on that island, and she's still the same person, and Selena still has trauma that she needs to work through and overcome. It's a very hard movie to watch at some points, and I think that can be kind of off-putting for people, and that, I think, is partially why this one isn't looked at as often when we talk about great King stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we read the book and we talked about this one and Gerald's Game, you know, and how they're very much companion pieces to each other. Both of them deal with very personal horrors. And I think this film manages, like Shawshank Redemption, to capture all of that and make it feel very visceral and real. In particular, like, the only part I think I would have liked more to touch on, was Vera and Dolores' relationship, because we get a lot more of that in the book. Uh-huh. And understanding how the two of them were and how they had had this very strange bond, even though Vera is obviously, like, incredibly difficult to deal with. Like, there is, like Selena talks about in the end, like, these two women love each other and they've been supporting each other for so long, even though they're both keeping secrets from each other. And it's just, this is very much a woman's story. And I think that probably also contributes to the fact that it's not as well regarded or known as King's other books, because it is so much focused on women's experiences, and those just unfortunately don't make as big a splash. Mm-hmm. Stories that focus on either, you know, groups or men. It's such a great example of King's non-horror work that even though it's hard to watch, it's really a necessary watch if you're a King fan.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the Dolores and Vera relationship, because it's like, we get a good feel for how it was at the beginning and a good feel for how it was at the very end there. But there isn't a whole lot of meat on what happened in between. We do see, you know, when the husband comes during the summer and he's hitting the golf balls and, you know, Dolores is trying to hang up the sheets in the very, very particular spot that Vera likes them. But as far as their personal relationship goes, we get a little bit of it, you know, when Dolores finds out about what's happening to Selena. And I think that was a very nice moment between those two characters, because Vera always put off this idea that she didn't care about other people and she didn't care about what other people were going through, especially people who weren't of her status in the world. And that was changed because she had this kind of connection with Dolores. And I agree, it would have been nice if they had touched on it a little more. I do think what they did give us, though, was good enough to put the pieces together yourself, but it would have been nice if you didn't have to put those pieces together.
Right. And it requires that end scene where Selena is in, you know, the office with all the cops and I don't know, the judge. I don't know who that guy was because they don't tell us. But
it's a little confusing.
Yes, but like then she has to give her like speech about this is what was going on. So we did, for those who haven't read the book, I feel like you probably did kind of need that to put the pieces together. But if you have read the book, it feels like they hit all the spots you need to in order to get it to show that relationship.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily have to know that Vera is just miserable and living a horrific half-life. Like we get so much more of in the book. They do just enough. You know, like I said, the script in this is just amazing because of how well it manages to pull all these little bits together and make it into one good story that gives us that same feeling as the book. Because that was, for me, a big part of it, is how well it mimics the book and how the emotional reactions that it tries to elicit from the viewer.
Right. It's one of those adaptations that doesn't require you having read the book beforehand to understand the essence of what is going on in this story and who these characters are. And I like when adaptations do that, even though they obviously had to change a lot from the book to be able to get all of these points across. It worked very well. And there are certain King books that are just so hard to adapt in a way that would allow that to happen. I think it is a good example of that because of the fact that there's so much detail in that book in particular, because it's, you know, roughly 1,100 pages long, no matter what copy you get of it. And
yes,
there's so much that you just can't put in one movie or even two movies in the case of the recent adaptations, because you're always going to have to leave something out. And I think with this, even though they left out the fact that Selena had siblings and you didn't really hear much about Vera's children or anything like that, it worked because you knew all of the players and you knew who they were at their core. And that just came across so well. And, you know, I definitely want to talk about the cinematography in this because there are so
yes.
many things that contrast with one another. When you have Selena and Dolores arriving at the house because Dolores had ended up living with Vera, it's just so dilapidated and graffiti is everywhere. And then you get these flashback images of Vera's summer house that Vera basically changed out the furniture in all the time. And you have her bossing these people around and you just get this difference in status so quickly when you see how these two characters are living.
Right. It's very shocking, the contrasts they have. And in particular, like, how they shoot this is kind of surprising at how hard they go with the filters on this, because all of the scenes in the present are given this blue filter that at first I was like, too much, maybe a little too much. Like, I feel like everyone kind of looks blue skinned here. But then once it starts flipping back to show the past, everything is really saturated and bright colors, and it's a really great way to show how the events of the past have kind of drained a lot of the life from the characters that we're seeing in the present, because that's how it feels. Like, they all feel very, not sad, but depressed or flat because of all the things they've been through. And even that goes to the detective character who's played by Christopher Plummer, who's obviously still holding on to all this frustration over not being able to get Dolores convicted for murdering Joe.
Yeah.
And we don't really find that out until about halfway through, I would say. It doesn't really become clear why he's being such a hard ass about this.
Right.
And then once we find that out, we see how this has still really affected him, too. And he's not even, you know, he is not even part of this family and doesn't know everything that was going on.
It's the case that got away from him, basically. And it's the one that
right.
kind of seems to keep him up at night, because I'm sure there are plenty of detectives who have similar real life stories of, you know, there's this one case I was never able to solve and it kept me up at night. And as you and I know, just sort of paying a little attention to true crime in general, you're kind of like, oh man, there are so many cold cases out there that got away from people for one reason or another, whether it was there was a lack of evidence or, you know, it's something from before all of this technology existed. And now it's like, you know, the evidence is too disintegrated maybe even to get all of this new technology working on those pieces of evidence. So you just have these cases that get away from people. And because Joe fell down the well, even though he had a little help, it was probably going to be too hard to prove that, oh no, he actually could have hit his head on a rock at the bottom of the well or something.
Right, right. And I think that was a good choice as opposed to in the book where it's much more obvious that he had some help with his death because she has to like brain him with the rock and everything. And I think because this movie is a simplified version, I think it works to have him just kind of fall right in, because it does, then it is very much like, well, he was drunk and wandering around. You know, you have no proof that Dolores had anything to do with this because Joe was a known drunk.
And that scene is shot so well, too, because you have just, you know, the setup beforehand of Dolores coming across the hidden well, basically, because she trips on it. And then it's not like that idea fosters right away. It's when she finds out about what's been happening to Selena, and then she kind of thinks back to, oh, hey, you know, I can piss him off enough to have him chase after me and I'll know where this is. It wasn't like as soon as she tripped over it, she was like, oh, this is how I'm going to kill Joe. It was something in the back of her mind. And then when they framed how she jumps over it and Joe falls into it, I just thought that sequence was done so well. And, you know, like we've already said, this is one of the sort of top tier adaptations for us. And I've noticed this common theme of the cinematography being something that really stands out in these top tier adaptations.
Yes. And I think the cinematography they use and how they shoot that scene and the fight that they have, like, you know, she has that conversation with Vera where Vera's like, you need to kill him. Girl, just kill him. Come on now. Just fuck that guy, is essentially what Vera is doing. Yeah. And then Vera makes it possible. She's like, okay, go home. Go home and kill him. Come on, get it over with. Like, you don't need
that. She's like, husbands have accidents every day.
Yep. Yep. One is happening probably right now while you're weeping.
I was like, and you know that's how she killed her husband. It was just,
right,
you know, this accident that they can't prove.
Yep. And then how they shoot, because you know, as the viewer, you know what's coming. And you see how Kathy Bates is playing Dolores as this delicate dance of like getting Joe comfortable so he'll get really drunk. And then she's like, okay, here's the moment. Gotta step up and do this. And then they have that horrific fight and the chase and then the fall. And it's all shot so intensely and they make it feel so scary because you know that Dolores is risking her own life when she initiates this, because if he finds out what's going on, and even if he doesn't, she stands a chance of him beating her to death. So it's just such an amazing culmination moment, and they really do save it until just the right moment in the movie, too. That once that happens, that's like the start of the third act where things are forced to a conclusion. And it's such a great way to satisfy us of wanting to know, like, okay, well, what exactly happened between them and what happened to Joe? And that once we find that out, it's like a relief. And then we get to see how it all ties up with a bow at the end.
Yeah, I think if we keep going on too much longer, we'll probably just end up repeating ourselves about how much we enjoy this adaptation. So I want to quickly dive into ratings real quick here, because I gave this a 4 out of 5 simply because they did make some changes that I thought were a little odd. Like, you couldn't just have one of the boys running around in the flashback scenes kind of thing. They kind of made it seem like Selena was an only child. And I think it would have helped the story a little more to understand, no, he was only molesting the daughter, not the boys. And you don't really get that idea here because you don't see that they have other children.
Yeah, I think it would have added a little touch of more, made everything seem darker. And, you know, and I think they could have had that because they do throw a bunch of other stuff in there with just like a little one or two throwaway lines. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm right there with you, a 4 out of 5 for this, because it really does. It's such a great adaptation in all the ways we've elucidated so far. And I think, like I said, there's a couple of things I would have liked to have seen more of. But I also did not want this movie to go on any longer than it did, because then I think it would have started to drag. So it's one of those where, like, I still think it's really fabulous, but as a King fan and as a fan of the book, it's like, oh, well, why couldn't I just see a little bit more about, you know, these couple things?
Yeah, or even, like we mentioned earlier, the Gerald's Game reference for the book that is kind of crucial to connecting the King universe. You know, maybe we could have seen a daughter and her dad off in the distance during the eclipse, because it's not necessarily that Dolores kind of sees what's happening. It's sort of like she has this tie to Jesse in this sort of like gut feeling and a vision kind of way. It's not like she was like, oh, hey, I can see this thing happening and I'm not going to do anything about it. She was definitely further away than that, as far as what I gathered from the book. And it was more of like this vision kind of hit her of this thing happening to this other girl that was similar to what happened to Selena.
Yes, I agree. I think that little connection is such, it's so powerful in the book, especially when you read Gerald's Game, and then they have it again when Jesse is trapped. And because I believe that what's happening to Jesse when she's an adult is happening at the same time that Vera dies.
Yeah.
So they have another moment, you know, when they're both again in a horrific crisis. And I think that it's such a great moment. And I agree. I would have liked to have seen a little more. And I would guess that if they did the movie now, they probably would, like if Netflix made it.
Oh, yeah. Especially given the Gerald's Game adaptation that Netflix put out with Mike Flanagan. And that was one that I'm looking forward to revisiting, because I don't think I enjoyed it quite as much on first viewing, simply because I hadn't read the book yet. So I think sometimes if you want to be a completist like I am with most of these adaptations, aside from Children of the Corn, of course, as I have noted quite a few times here. But after reading Gerald's Game, the book, I think if I go back and revisit the movie soon, or soon-ish, it'll still be like over a year before I cover it on the podcast. It's one of those things where I'm going to see it in a different light, because I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense as an adaptation, the way this story was told, because it mimics the book so much better than I realized, not having read the book first. And I like it when movies can still be good like this one without having to read the book to fully understand everything that's going on. And I'm not saying that's the case with Gerald's Game per se, but I'm just saying it'll be seen through a different lens for me, particularly having read the book. And the nice thing about this podcast is that I'm typically reading the book before having seen the movies. There are obviously big ones like this that I ended up watching before reading the book, and Gerald's Game, where it's like these adaptations are just so in my face, and you know, they're on streaming services or something, and I can't ignore them, because I watched Dolores Claiborne the first time, I believe, when it was on HBO streaming. And I was like, oh, you know that's a King adaptation. I'm going to watch it. And I think I might have even done that before I started the podcast, or shortly after starting the podcast. So it wasn't in my mind to go read the book first. It was like, hey, this thing might be leaving HBO soon, so let me hurry up and watch it. And then, you know, on rewatch, I was like, yeah, I understand why they made so many changes to this one.
Yeah. And I think this is a really great example of something where you can watch the movie first and then go read the book, and you'll have a great experience, you know, because you can, it's like, oh, well, this really fleshes everything out. It doesn't feel like the two are conflicting at all. It feels like they go very well together. So, yeah, I think I first watched this when I was, oh, God, like when it was on TV after it came out when I was probably 12, 13, something like
Maybe earlier than you should have watched it.
Oh, much earlier. My mother was very permissive in regards to movies, especially, weirdly enough, Stephen King movies. I watched It, the TV adaptation, at a very young age and should not have watched it. I had nightmares about that shower scene for a long time. But, you know, this one is much different than that, obviously. So I think it works well, and I would almost say this is a great, if someone is interested in reading Stephen King and they're like, oh, I'm just not sure, this is something you could show them and say, here's an example of his other work. You know, watch this movie. If you like it, read the book and then explore other works, because this isn't, you know, far out there. It's not really dense like his, you know, his Bricks. So I think it's a really good introduction to the character work that Stephen King does that he is, you know, a master of.
It's way more of this sort of mystery, suspense, thriller type novel than it is a horror novel. And I know horror isn't something that is going to be for everyone, but I think King has enough stories that would appeal to non-horror fans that are worth checking out. And then obviously he has the fantasy thing going with all of the various books that tie into the Dark Tower series, which I am learning is a lot more than I thought there were. So, yeah. You know,
it's impressive.
It's one of those things where he is known for his horror novels like Pet Sematary and like It, but people don't necessarily realize that certain stories like this one can come from him as well. And I'm glad that the movie adaptations of those stories exist, because like I said, some people are like, oh, I didn't even know that was a King thing, you know. And it is amazing how wide he sort of spread his wings and was like, oh no, you know, I'm not going to do a straight horror novel, I'm going to do this novel or novella about just humans in these elements that are very real to them and very real to a lot of other people. And I'm going to add these horrific things because those are realities for so many people. And that was certainly the case with this one. You know, maybe not every wife murders her husband for molesting their daughter, but it's something that so many families have experienced.
Right. And especially, like we said, back previous 1975 and before, like, now you could do other things.
Yeah.
Now you could go to the police about it, and now you could get your daughter a therapist and all of that. But in 1975, like, good luck, especially if you live on a tiny remote island. Like, those just weren't options for women then. So I think, thankfully, I don't think that the world is quite as harsh as it was then in some ways, and maybe not in all, but
right.
So I think this is such a good example of how the world has changed, and you can read this and get a sense of how things used to be. It is not wild and crazy out there. It's, you know, it is a sad and horrible truth that this is something that did happen probably more often than we think it did, because women didn't have any kind of options, so they did what they had to do to protect their children.
Exactly. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap this up here. Katie, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this movie. I know it's one that you and I both enjoyed as a book, so it's fun to also get to, you know, compare and contrast the book and the adaptation.
Right. It's such a treat when the book is great and the adaptation is great.
And for different reasons.
We've seen all too many where that's not the case.
Oh, exactly. And quickly, before we go here, I want to let you know about our Patreon. For $1 a month, you will get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, you can get yourself a limited Chat Cemetery sticker. There aren't too many left, so if you want to support this, that's a good way to do that. You can follow us at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. As always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.